Chats from the Blog Cabin.
This is your favorite time of the week with your number one podcast.
Hey y'all, welcome back to Chats from the Blog Cabin. I told you that I would tell you about what happened and why I went on my hiatus, but right now I don't feel like talking about it. So with that, I hope you really enjoy this episode that I recorded with the curator and the director of the Alphabet Museum, which is the Jars Museum, which is in Waxhaw, North Carolina. This past summer, Gracie, who you often know, she's been a guest on the podcast, my youngest daughter and I attended a book launch for Ashley Morgan Jackson's book. And while we were there, we decided, instead of going up just for the day, we decided to go up and do the actual tourist thing, because it's a part of the state of North Carolina we've not seen, and we went to Waxhaw. And when I was going through Waxhaw, which is a little bit south of Charlotte, when I was deciding where we were going to go, I decided that we were going to go and we were going to explore some things. And so when I was looking through these things to do in Waxhaw, I came across the Alphabet Museum, which I knew nothing about. And y'all, it was probably one of the best museums I've been to. It was so interactive. It was so interesting. There was so much compacted in such a small museum that it was just amazing the impact that it made. And so I signed up to be on their mailing list, and I decided that I wanted Debbie, or one of the museum director, to come on. And so it happened. So I hope you enjoy this episode. If you are in the North Carolina area, especially if you're toward the mountains of North Carolina, if you're visiting, I highly recommend going to the Alphabet Museum in Waxhaw, because it is by far, like I said, one of the best museums, and it has something for everyone. And it's just a great, great place. And the volunteers were so sweet when we walked in. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. Hey y'all, it's Melissa. Did you know that creativity is courageous, so you need to pass it on? Albert Einstein was known for saying that. And I want to pass on something right now to you. So listen up. Attention DIY enthusiasts. Whether you're an intermediate or advanced, are you ready to unleash your inner creativity and dive headfirst into the wonderful world of do-it-yourself projects? Well, look no further, because I'm thrilled to invite you to join me for the new DIY show every Monday at noon Eastern Time on Market.live. Brace yourself for an action-packed 30 minutes of crafts that are easy to do, simple to do, that you can do while you are watching TV or while you are cooking dinner or whatever. It's great. I'll give you some tips and tricks to guarantee you take your DIY game to a whole new level, from upcycling to creating stunning masterpieces to creating personalized gifts that scream, "I made this just for you," to even tackling those pesky household repairs with confidence. I've got it covered for y'all. So mark your calendars, set those reminders, grab your tool belts, because Mondays are about to become the highlight of your week. Join our vibrant community of passionate do-it-yourselfers by joining me Mondays on Market.live, the DIY show, at noon Eastern time. And if you cannot catch the live, catch the replay, because I promise you that there's going to be something for everyone. I try to make these crafts as simple as possible, so that if you're a busy mom or a busy dad, or you're busy in your life, with your life going on, but you want to create a project that you can sit back and look at it and say, "I did that," and you want to be proud of it, that you're going to be able to take something that can be store-bought and make it into your own. And I also give little tips and tricks along the way where if you have kids at home, you can get the kids involved in crafting while you're doing your craft, so they're not going to be bugging you while you're trying to get your craft on. So I promise you, you will not be disappointed. So join me every Monday at noon for the next couple of weeks, noon Eastern time, on Market.live. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Until next time, bye!
Come join Melissa and her guests on the Chats from the Blog Cabin podcast. From North Carolina, this podcast will have you feeling like you've known these folks for years. Listen in as they chat about life, culture, current events, and more, all with a special Southern flair. Curl up with your favorite beverage and get ready to be entertained. Tune in now for a unique experience that's fun and insightful.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Chats in the Blog Cabin. You know, the show where I virtually invite people into the blog cabin to chat about life. And today I'm extremely honored that Debbie is joining us. My daughter and I, we actually went to a book launch up near Waxhaw, and we got to experience the Jars Museum, and it was an amazing museum. We did not even know it existed, and what's even more amazing about it, it's free to go into and look through. And so Debbie's going to come on. Debbie's here now, and she's going to tell us a little about herself, and then she's going to talk about the Jars mission. So Debbie, it's all yours.
Hi, I'm Debbie Newby, and I am the director of the museum here at Jars. And let's see, to tell you a little bit about myself, I have worked at four museums and always been interested in history and museums. And I love going to museums. So having a career in this is exciting. I have a bachelor's degree in secondary ed social studies from the University of Michigan. I actually grew up in Indiana, and then my husband and I got married and I finished my degree in Michigan. And then I also have a master's in management and leadership that I completed at Montreat College in North Carolina. So I have been here at the museum as the curator and now the director for about 7 years in November. My husband and I both work here. I actually came here after I lost a job at another museum during the downturn of in the 2010, 2011, where I was one of the last hired at a museum, and they got rid of about 25% of the folks. And so I was looking for a new job, and somebody said, hey, you should go check out Jars. And we lived about 30, 45 minutes from here. And we came over for what they call a Jars Day, which Jars has usually a couple times a year. And it's sort of a big open house. So you can learn about what Jars does, and you can also come to the museums. And so I was blown away by the work of Jars, and I'll tell you a little bit about that now, or in just a moment. First, I guess I should tell you, then we were so blown away by it that my husband and I both ended up deciding we wanted to join the work here. But most of the positions here are not paid, they're supported. So that meant we had to do some training and go out and build partnerships that would help pay for our salaries. So that took a couple years. And so about 7 years ago, we came on staff here. So why were we blown away about Jars? Jars stands for Jungle Aviation and Relay Service. And it's been around for 75 years. This is our 75th birthday year, and we've been celebrating that this year since May. It all got started by a man named William Cameron Townsend, and he had gone to Guatemala in about 1917 to sell Spanish Bibles. When he got there, he found out that the people that he was selling to up in the mountains did not speak Spanish or read it. So they weren't buying any Bibles. So he thought, you know, they need to have the Bible in their own language. So he and a translation team that he put together of locals, they were able to translate the Bible there in Kachakel in about 10 years. And that started his passion and desire for Bible translation. As he was climbing these mountains and walking all around by foot or sometimes on donkey, he said, boy, aviation would really help make this a faster thing, and it would be safer. And over the years, as they moved to Mexico and so forth, and sometimes they were losing missionaries because of accidents on the way to and from with, you know, turning over in the water or of a canoe and a rushing river or some other creature or something attacking them. All kinds of accidents can happen in the jungle and mountains. And so he said, we really do have to have some, we have to have some airplanes. And also we need some radios because we cannot contact the translators when they go out into the villages to translate, and they can't let us know if they're sick or if they're out of food or if, you know, they need help or anything. So that's why JARS was founded in 1948, was to, and at that time it was Jungle Aviation and Radio Service, because a key aspect was radio so they could communicate with the translators on the field, and then the aviation. Well, we're a lot more today. We're not using radios anymore. So now it's relay services, but we still are providing all kinds of transportation, not just aviation anymore either. We also do maritime and also land transportation. For example, in Africa, they often might need motorcycles and motorcycle training to get through to their various locations because they only have a path to go on, or because the road is completely flooded and they can get it, scoot around it on a motorcycle, but they can't with the Land Rover. Mm-hmm. So here at JARS, we actually have a four-wheel drive training course, a motorcycle training class. We have an airport. We also train our people who are already pilots, but we train them in how to do short landing and takeoffs, because on some of these island nations that are super remote, or some of these valleys in the mountains that are super remote, they need to be able to do that. We have special planes that we acquire that are designed for very short landings and takeoffs. Those are the type of things needed in the remote places we work. And often we are the only ones who are flying in some of those places, or who are providing classes for missionaries before they go over in how to do, or not even just here, but sometimes our teams go overseas to Papua New Guinea or Cameroon or someplace like that. And they will train local translators and local literacy workers, as well as translators and workers from all over the world that are doing the work. So in our one of our buildings at the JARS campus, we have two buildings. One is the Pittman building and the other is the Cardenas building, and they're right next door to each other. And sandwiched in between is the gravesite of our founder, Cameron Townsend, and his wife. So you can visit that too if you would like. Also, the Cardenas building, which is where I am right now, that's where my office is, has a helicopter in it. An old car that was Cameron Townsend's car back in Mexico, so 1930s, and a motorcycle. And we also have some boat models and airplane models, and a boat that your kids can drive. So it's very interactive. Would you like me to keep talking about some of the things at the museum, or tell you more about JARS, or what?
Actually, you hit something. You talked about JARS Day. Let's talk about that. Let's back up and talk about that a minute. Okay. Because I know when you go to the museums, there two museums are opened just about every day, except certain days of the week, right?
Yeah. The museum is open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 4. We're never opened on Sundays. JARS Days are a couple times a year. We didn't have one this year because we had our big celebration for our 75th instead. But I think we're supposed to have one again next year. I don't have a date yet, but folks can check out our website. And JARS is spelled J-A-A-R-S. So it's two A's. So if you want to look it up, JARS.org. So anyway, JARS Days are open houses and they change each time, but usually we have airplane rides that people, and that they pay, do pay for to cover the gas and everything. Helicopter rides, they can do four-wheel drive course. Then there are sometimes scavenger hunts or treasure hunts. There's boat rides a lot of times. And then the museums are open and we often have special activities, including blowgun demonstrations. So you can, you'll get a chance to talk with people that are working in all different areas here at JARS, and your kids will enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. There's usually food trucks and things like that. And sometimes there's a concert connected with it. Sometimes it starts in the morning, goes to the afternoon. Sometimes it'll start in the afternoon and go to the evening. So you'll have to look and see what we're doing next time. But it's through a JARS day that my husband and I ended up coming here.
I can't imagine, because I had never heard of it until I started looking for things to do in Waxhaw, in and around Waxhaw. And the way it made it seem is like, oh, you could walk to it, but you can't walk to this museum from Waxhaw. That's the way Waxhaw, the town of Waxhaw, makes it seem like you could actually walk to the museum.
Yeah. 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 We're a favorite attraction in the Waxhaw area, and it's about 8 minutes to the edge of town. And we're sort of out on our own. Because of the airport, because they were making an airport and they needed a bunch of acreage. The Belk family, Henderson Belk of the Belk department stores in the area, back in 1960 gave JARS 257, I believe it was, acres of land that had been cotton fields and fields like that. And he said, can you use this for your airport? And we say, yeah, it's perfect. So that's why we ended up here, out in the country, but we're only about 7 or 8 minutes from Waxhaw.
Now, we need to take a brief commercial break, but when we get back, I want to talk to you about more about the museums and the fact that, number one, they're free. So we'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Joanna, and I would like to share with you a little bit about Shores of Grace, Shores Philly. It's a ministry located in Philadelphia. The portion of Shores that I volunteer for goes into Kensington, an area greatly impacted by homelessness and addiction. And we go and we take love, food, clothing, snacks, conversation. We believe that it is a way that we can meet people right where they are and show them the love of Jesus. We have seen lives changed in big ways and in small ways, and we have built wonderful relationships with the people in the community. We have big plans, more we'd like to do, and we would appreciate any support, either through prayer or through donation. If you would like to donate, you can go to shoresofgrace.com, and in the menu, click on donate. And we just ask that you put Philly in your donation comments. Thank you.
And we are back chatting with Debbie, who is the museum director of the JARS Museum in Waxhaw. And Debbie, why is, number one, why is this museum not known? I'm sure it's all known now, but why is it just right around Waxhaw area? Because honestly, like I said, I didn't even know it existed until I started looking up things to do in Waxhaw. And I think that was probably one of our favorite things. My 21-year-old daughter and I went, and it was one of our most favorite things. The museum, it was very interactive. You learned a lot. It wasn't so overwhelming that things were just coming at you. But it's, I want to go back up there just to visit. And I have talked about this museum to everybody I know. So,
well, that's great. We're always happy to hear that. And we do get really good reviews. Why is it not known well? Well, we actually get, I think the last time I looked at it, this was right before the pandemic. We had had visitors from 48 of the 50 states, and that year it even included somebody from Alaska and somebody from Hawaii, and from 10, sometimes we've had from 15 different countries throughout the world. We also have a virtual tour that we put together during the pandemic. And so we even had people from Dubai and China and so forth who were able to visit virtually. Partly, I think it's because we're out in the country. It's 6 or 8 minutes from Waxhaw. So we don't get the traffic that big museums on a city street get past us. And also, you know, it's just sort of an unusual museum alphabet. Some people think that it's a preschool museum or just for preschoolers or something because it's alphabets. And they think it's the U.S., the alphabet we use here in the U.S., which is the Roman or Latin alphabet. And we actually cover in the Pittman building most of the world's major alphabets. Now, we can't cover all of them. I can't even tell you, there isn't even a resource that tells you exactly how many alphabets there are in the world. I can tell you how many approximate languages there are, and there's something like 7,400 languages. Now, we don't believe there's as many alphabets because, for example, the Latin or Roman alphabet is the most used in the world. And there's lots of, you know, the European languages that use it. Our language does. There's lots of places that use that alphabet. But that Pittman building also covers we have an area, I love the way that they did it. It took 10 years to put together the building and plan it, and it was very carefully researched. At the time, people didn't talk much about linguistics, and so part of it was to explain, what is linguistics? Why do we need people who go out into remote areas of the world where they need you know, literacy or translation? Why can't they just learn English? Or why can't they just learn, you know, use the main language of the country they're in? Well, we understand best in the language we were born into, that we spoke in our homes, that our mothers and dads speak to us. So that was important to our founder, to that people understand the importance of linguistics and the importance of language. I mean, think where you would be if you were not able to read. There are still something like 1,600 languages out there in the world that do not have an alphabet even. So they have their own language, but then it's not written down. It's oral. Everything you have to remember or tell in a story. So we feel it's super important that people be able to learn to read. They can't do that without an alphabet. That people are able to read the Bible, for one thing. And when the translators work today, too, they put together a dictionary as well. So then they can have other books as well. So those are all works that we support here at JARS. And we talk about some of that in that museum. But each room is focused on a different alphabet and where it came from. So you not only get the information about where the alphabet came from, but you're learning about the culture too, because each room is set up so that you have murals that are all over the walls of what that area looks like, or how that area, the culture of that area. There are artifacts that are in there, including we have a Torah, which is one of our favorite objects and oldest, that dates back over 100 years. It's from Jewish synagogue in Eastern Europe who were getting rid of it because it had gotten dirty on the edges. And so they didn't want to keep it. They wanted a clean one. So they were getting a clean one. And somehow people heard about this museum and we got the Torah. So we have various Bibles in each room, but each room also tells the story of where the alphabet came from. You can look at the actual alphabets and they can tell the story, and each one of them has a unique story. So Indic, Chinese, Korean, we have Cherokee and other North American languages like Cree. And we even go back all the way to Mesoamerica. And for the roots of the Roman alphabet that we use, it goes all the way back to hieroglyphics and cuneiform. So it's a great place for parents to take their kids and for families, college students, but also schools to come because it totally fits in with the curriculum for teaching about culture. And really the translators are key in helping preserve the culture, because if a culture loses its language because the people who can speak it die out and the rest of them are trying to learn this other language they weren't born speaking, it loses an important part or piece of the culture. So we highly respect and value the different alphabets and languages around the world. The last part of the museum too talks about the current work that's going on. And we have video from some places. We have a experiential room on Papua New Guinea where we made it look like a translation center in Papua New Guinea. That happens to be the country that has the most languages in the world. And so you can go on there and you can get in the computer. And I mean, there's a mural of the ocean that was done by our artist who had lived in Papua New Guinea. And there's other aspects of the room, but you can try out some of the things that translators use to be able to translate. But you can also get on the computers. And if you'd like to learn about, well, what does a translator do? What does a literacy specialist do? What does a scripture engagement person do? You can go on our computer and you can have an adventure as a linguist or as one of those people. So we try to have it very interactive. You can stamp your name in hieroglyphs, and we have a treasure hunt that's also free. And while the museum, most of the signage would be well above a preschooler, it would probably be more for like seven, 8 year olds and up. We have a preschool treasure hunt that kids can do A to Z, and they look for various things that go with that for families that come in with preschoolers, and they get a treasure at the end. And again, it's free. We want the museums to be free because we want people to be able to learn about what we do and also about the need still today, even with Google Translate, for translation work and literacy. We also have a family treasure hunt that's for a little bit older, and families can do that together. There's also a cell phone tour that you can do as you go through. So if you're one of those people that doesn't like a guided tour, you have two choices, the cell phone tour, or we have a paper guide that just gives you a little bit of information for each room and has a map on it. But if you want to call ahead and schedule a guided tour, we can often do that. Sometimes we can do one on a, you know, walk-in basis, but it just depends on what staff I have here, because mostly we're staffed by volunteers.
Now, I love the fact when I was walking through that you got to experience the culture. Where did that idea come from to be able to combine that with what you guys do?
Well, if you think about it, it would be pretty boring to just read signs on the walls and not have supporting evidence. And each culture is so unique that it was valued. So, okay, we need to show what the culture's like and not just have it just about the alphabets. So having some of that added in you use art. So that's a visual that helps people remember things and enjoy things and appreciate art. And we use sounds or things like that, lighting and various things to help set the stage so that it's more interesting to people and they can enjoy it more and maybe feel a little bit like they've flown away to one of those countries. That's the Pittman Building, very different than the Cardenas Building. Would you like me to tell you about that?
Yes, please.
So the Cardenas Building used to be the museum. It was the Mexico Cardenas Museum. So they were two separate, but run by the same staff. And we felt like that needed a new focus. So this last year, we put in many hours putting together new exhibits, and that reopened with a soft reopening in May. We still had a few exhibits we've been adding, and we're actually having our grand opening on November 4th from 10 until 3. And we have a few extra things happening that day. If the weather cooperates, we're going to be doing the blowguns and so forth. And there'll be some food and we'll have a ribbon cutting and some presentations. But anyway, so we changed the focus because people come here and they would go, well, what is JARS? And we didn't have any exhibits on that in the Alphabet Museum in the Pittman Building. So he said, we need to talk about what our story is here. And we wanted to make it very interactive because it's not just kids who like to get in airplanes and pretend to fly or, you know, talk on a radio or, you know, do things like that. So we made it very interactive. And I had nothing to do with the Alphabet Museum Pittman building because that was done before 1990 and I wasn't here then. But we've had a lot of fun putting together these exhibits. And so far, we're getting really good feedback from kids and parents who are enjoying and adults that are all the way up in their 80s and 90s because it tells that story. It starts with Guatemala, moves to Mexico and Peru, and then explains why we came back to Waxaw. We have model airplanes. We have a couple of boat models. We have a helicopter you can get in and pretend to fly with a couple of videos from all around the world that you can watch flying in Cameroon and Brazil and Papua New Guinea. We also have some other interactive activities, and we still have some ideas for some more we're planning to add in the next few years as well. But it's a fun place to come in. It's smaller, a little bit smaller than the other museum. It's very interactive, and you can read the stories of JARS and how it got started, and you can read why JARS is needed because we do work in the most remote areas. Primarily, our unique areas are, I guess I should mention our mission. We reduce barriers, ease burdens, and deliver God's word. And we do that by training, equipping, deploying, and sustaining individuals, teams, and stations to aid in the work of proclaiming the gospel. So yes, literacy is super important, but we also want people to have the Bible. And so we do some of that here on campus by training pilots. And we also have a course called Intercultural Communications course that trains people from all different mission groups to prepare them for going to work in a different culture. And it's to help make it an easier experience for them and to help them have the tools they need to deal with living in a different culture, but also working with people from other cultures. Used to, most of the missionaries were coming from the West and going to the East. That is not true. I mean, there's still a lot that do, but there's also missionaries coming from all over the world now. And so often teams are made up of a variety of different cultures. So this is to help prevent having so many issues when you're overseas. But so the key areas that we're so unique in is the mission aviation, the maritime boats and providing safety equipment for some of these people, translators who are going around to their translation areas, both locals and people from the outside in canoes, and they're crossing the open ocean. We recently had a boat just a couple of weeks ago that some translators were in that got swamped and they had to get rescued. So that's a key thing that JARS helps provide rescue equipment and safety equipment and to these various teams so that they can have that even if they are going in a canoe across the ocean to get to their places.
I just love that. I love the fact that you focus on the multicultural too, because if you don't know, my family's very multicultural. My husband's a native of Mexico and my son-in-law was born in Japan. So, and he's three-fourths Japanese and quarter, and he's a quarter like American, but he was raised by a Puerto Rican stepdad. So we have all the cultures there. So I love the fact that you integrate the cultures. Now, when you are thinking about exhibit, because you're talking about how you just created the new exhibits, what goes into your mind process or your thought process? I know you have a team, but do you guys kind of get together and say, okay, this would be cool, this would be cool, but then you have to narrow down your ideas?
Yes. And I have to admit, every time I go into a museum anywhere for fun, I always am getting ideas and I take pictures of those things. I'm like, ooh, I love the way they did this in this exhibit. This really helped me learn this, or this was really fun. And I also take notes. And so it doesn't matter. That always is happening. And my team is the same way, because the people who work here, they love museums and they love history. And so they come up with ideas, yes. But this time we did call in an outside design team or a designer because we knew that when we were making the signs and some of the, we may have a diorama in here now, that those we were not capable, we didn't have the equipment or the know-how to make some of those signs. And so we contacted a local company and we worked with their designer and he helped us with some of that too. We said, well, this is what we'd like to do. Can you help us do that? And so he would be able to tell us that. And but our team did all the content research. And the nice thing is part of this building, we now have the Townsend Archives here. And that just moved in the last couple of years. And it's all the papers from Cameron Townsend that he, all his letters he sent out, all the letters that were sent to him over his lifetime. We have things that date back to 1914 and come all the way up till even till he died in the 80s. And so having those papers here, and we have video from some of the areas around the world, we have audio and so forth, that helps give us a lot of resource material. And sometimes we would find something like, for example, we have a exhibit where you can press a button and listen to radio traffic between the base in Urena Kocha, which was Jars, where Jars was first base was, and the pilots in the airplanes and some of the translators in the villages from the 1950s.
Wow.
And we've got a few minutes of that you can actually listen to. So that came about because we were working in the archives and we found these audio tapes and we started listening to them and we said, oh my goodness, this is actual radio traffic from back then. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get somebody to help us pull it down into a few minutes of listening. And so you can actually listen to that. So that, and then we have a old radio too sitting there that you can pretend to talk in. We're hoping to upgrade that in the next couple of years so that you could actually talk on the radio and have somebody talk back to you, but we don't have that ready yet. So that was how that idea, for example, came about.
That is so awesome. Now, take us through your day as a museum director, because I know a lot of people are like, what exactly do museum directors and curators do? So let's talk about that, what you actually do.
Okay, well, it's a fun job, and there's lots of variety in what I do. So to give you an example, sometimes I'm needed to give a tour to a tour group because I don't have enough other staff there that day. Sometimes I'm having meetings with other staff at JARS to plan for JARS Day or another special event, our grand reopening. And I'm working with an events team to do that planning. Sometimes I am, there's always email to process, but there's people calling to say, hey, we need to research about Cameron Townsend or JARS and what they did with this airplane and so forth. And so often that will be turned over to my archivist that works here, but we may have to discuss, well, who should we, what do we need to research to do that? So sometimes it's writers who are getting ready to write a book and they want to get some information. Mm-hmm. Other times we have people coming in and they are thinking about coming to serve here at JARS. And so I take them around the museum and answer some of their questions, maybe about JARS and why it's a great place to work. I also right now am in the process of writing a grant to try to get some money to, we have a whole bunch of other archival papers that need to be scanned and digitized so that we make sure that if we have a flood or a fire, we don't lose 75 years mm-hmm. worth of information. So grant writing is one. Exhibit design I mentioned already, and I love to do that. I'm always thinking of updating exhibits because one of the things you learn in the museum field, you can't just keep the same exhibit forever. Mm-hmm. People get bored and they say, oh, well, it's just the same old museum. There's no need for me to go back again. And so you might, I think about the museum the American History Museum at the Smithsonian and the First Lady's dresses exhibit. So I've been to see that multiple times in over the last 30 years. And it's very different because it's still the same subject, but they tell different stories. They may have different dresses on display. Sometimes they have an audio component. So it's interesting to go back because they've changed what you're learning and how you're learning it, but it's still the First Lady's exhibit. So we are always thinking about how can we pull this in and do a better job of explaining this to the public and making this a fun activity. We're always hearing stories from missionaries who are coming on to our station here. We have housing here for missionaries who are coming back. The pilots all have to come back for training, and some are coming for the other training. And so they'll come back and they'll visit, and we'll hear stories of what's happening on the field in these remote areas that are really exciting. And we want to be able to share those with the public as they're coming in. So I take notes on those. Sometimes I'm going to hear them speak. And it can be very different giving a tour to a group that is full of homeschoolers to giving a group that's seniors and how you do those. So it's fun interacting with people, but a lot of my work is done at the computer because of the writing grants. I have to do the schedule of my staff. I have to do staff training. So that gives you an idea. And any one day, I might be doing 10 different things, and also occasionally having an unexpected thing come. So you have to be flexible as a museum director.
Now, you talk about staff training. You said the majority of your staff is volunteers. Where do you get these volunteers from?
Okay, two main places. One is we'll have missionaries that were on the field and they have to come back because of medical reasons or retirement or for whatever reason they have to come back, or they're needed here for something. And so they'll come onto the station, to some of them, to work. And then if they retire, then they want to still volunteer because they believe passionately about what we do here at JARS. So they'll look around for something they want to do. And if they're into history in the museums, then they'll come and apply here. So that's where some of them are. I do have a couple paid two paid staff. One is my archivist, and then the other is a fellow, because we have a fellowship program for recent college graduates. And so they're here for a year. The other volunteers, some of them, it's word of mouth. We have like a whole group here that have come from Vermont because a first family came down, and then they told other people to retire down here, and then they told other people, and more people from their town kept coming down. And so local people in the area too. One of my best volunteers is somebody who came down a friend said, "Oh, you should come and volunteer at the museum." And they came. So we are definitely in need of volunteers. I'm actually looking for an assistant museum manager right now. And you can do that as a volunteer, although it's full time, or you can do it you'd have to raise your support. And we help with that. There are different ways of doing that, and we're that's evolving as well. We need people to scan and digitize those documents. So I actually have linguists who have served in the Philippines and PNG, other people who've served in PNG, Papua New Guinea, some who've served in South America that work here, and then others who have not served overseas. So really I look for people who are passionate about translation work and people who are passionate about what JARS does with aviation and maritime and land transportation, and people who are passionate about museums. So I can train you if you come with your passion, and God always seems to bring, when I'm going to need something, God always seems to bring the right people. Recently, we had a situation where we were working on the museum here and one of the exhibits. And I said, we're missing something. We need something about our friendship fleet airplanes. We need to focus on one so that we can explain what the friendship fleet was in JARS history. And the next day, somebody walked in and said, hey, I have all this stuff about the Friendship of Maine. My husband was involved in this. I'm downsizing because I'm moving to an independent living. Could you use that? That was the next day.
Wow.
And then recently we needed a glass case to put our airplane models in that we're acquiring. And I said, well, I don't really have any more budget for that this year. And the next week we were given a glass case that was worth $8,000 to $10,000.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting.
That is exciting. Now, you mentioned a lot of the jars, what they do, it's basically you have to raise, like you said, your job, you had to raise support to get hired as a full-time. So let's talk about how people can help jars.
Okay. Well, I think I've given you, you've got the website on there. And if you just go to jars.org, you can go on and there's a place of getting involved. And there's a place that if you want to serve here, and I'll tell you another way you can serve too, but if you want to give, and you can go on there and it'll tell you how to give. And also we need prayer people to pray too. And so there's a place you can get on to get signed up to get a prayer request that will send you a sheet for 2 months, or you can get it electronically, and you can pray for one request each day so it doesn't overwhelm you. And then as far as serving, we have a couple ways you can serve as volunteers or as supported staff. We do have some paid positions. So you can go on our website and look for what positions are open, like finding my assistant museum manager position. And you can look for what you might want to do, because we have positions that are 10 hours a week and we have positions that are 40 hours a week and they all in between. And we need plumbers and HVAC people, and because this is a campus of over 700 acres, and we have apartment buildings, retirement buildings, we have houses, an airport, et cetera, et cetera. So you get the idea, we have a lot of buildings. So we need people who like to do flowers, and they can come and work in our gardens in the summer. And so we also will take people who can only do it for a couple of weeks. We have lots of snowbirds that come down in January, February, and we do have apartments here that you can rent while you're here and get out of the cold, and you can do various projects for us. I have some that come back every year, and so does Jars. Maybe you're a grant writer. We might be able to use you, and you could work remotely from where you live while you're doing your regular job. And in your off hours, you can say, hey, I can give Jars some time. And this is my expertise. So we need all kinds of people.
I love that. I love the fact that basically anybody that's willing to help, you'll find a way to plug them into somewhere to help with Jars.
Yes.
Now, what should people expect when they're coming to the museum? Because like I said, when Gracie and I went, we really weren't expecting, we didn't really know what to expect. And we were blown away by the exhibit and just walking through and getting to experience the different cultures, I think was what blew us away, and the interactiveness. Even though a lot of your stuff that's interactive is meant for school age kids, we were still getting giddy over being able to write our names in hieroglyphics,
right,
and stuff like that. So what should people expect when they come to Jars?
So it's designed for all ages. Like I think I said before, and preschoolers aren't going to be able to read anything, but if you have preschoolers with you, we've got that treasure hunt. When you come in, you'll register, so that's how we track what countries and states people come from and that kind of in our numbers. There's parking out front and also to the side of the Cardenas building, and across the street, there's more parking at the Townsend building. You usually will come into the Pittman building first. That's the one open 9 to 4. And in the lobby, then they'll explain your options on getting a tour or giving yourself your own tour and going through. If you would read every single thing in the building, it's going to take you the entire 9 to 4. But your head would probably explode because it's a lot of information. If you try to read everything, that's not necessarily what we suggest. Our highlight tour takes about an hour. The cell phone tour takes about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on if you get to choose if you want to see this video or not, and that kind of thing. So you go through clockwise because you start in the ancient world and move forward in time. And you pick and choose what you would like to do. And like I said, if you have kids, we will offer the treasure hunt. But we have adults who like to do the treasure hunt too. We just won't probably give you a treasure at the end. There's restrooms there, a drinking fountain, and you're welcome to bring water through with you. And then the Cardinus building, we actually have center tours here at JARS where you can tour the base and you can actually go in the hangar and see the airplanes and learn more about that as well. It's a walking tour of about a mile. That begins in the Cardinus building, usually in the mornings around 9:30. You do need to make a reservation for that a couple weeks in advance so we make sure we have the tour guides. So that's why this isn't open usually in the morning, but you can take that center tour first, or you can go down and do the Alphabet Museum Pittman building first and come over here at 12:30 when the Cardinus building's open from 12:30 to 3:30. So if you want a guided tour for sure, you do need to call a couple weeks in advance. If you're willing to walk through on your own, which you can, that's also okay. You cannot go into the hangar or anything like that without being on a guided tour because of, you know, the FAA regulations and security and so forth. Also across the street, we have a cafe that's open Mondays through Fridays. And it's open from 11:30 to 1. And we have simple sandwiches, hamburgers, sometimes soups, and that kind of thing that you can get and eat there. Or you can go into Waxaw, which is 6 or 8 minutes away, and get food there. There's also a playground on campus. If you're coming from a distance and you want your kids to get a chance to go outside and play on the playground, that's fine too. The other thing is we have two gift shops. One is in the main building where the cafe is, and it's much larger. But the Pittman building of the museum has a gift shop as well. And we just expanded that and we have more items in there. So it makes a great place to get some gifts. And some of the items are international items from overseas as well.
Yes. And I will say definitely shop, because I think I actually went ahead and gave it to my daughter and my son-in-law. I found family written in Japanese, and there was like a whole poem that somebody had written, and they had written the character family in Japanese. And I'm like, that is it. That is their Christmas present. So I went ahead and gave it to them when they were here. But
that's great.
Our time is almost up, Debbie. What is the one thing that if you had to talk about JARS and one little brief little elevator pitch, what would that be?
JARS is doing a unique work that is very needed so that that everybody in the world has a chance to be able to read the Bible in their own language that they understand best. And that can transform lives. And having it having that happen, we need JARS because some of the areas are so remote. An airplane ride could take you an hour, whereas it might take you 7 days of riding in a car partway, then getting a hiking, fording 7 rivers on the way to get to a mountainous village. We just heard about that, where it takes a little over an hour by plane, or you can ford these 7 rivers that, and you're holding your stuff above your head trying to cross so that everything doesn't get wet. So if you would like to have a part in that, come find out more about us, and we'll tell you how you can do that.
And that leads me to the perfect segue. Where can people find out more about JARS?
Okay, so you've got the website up there, so www.jars.org, and remember it's two A's if you forget. And we're located at 6409 Davis Road in Waxaw. Again, it's right outside of town, North Carolina. It's very near the North Carolina-South Carolina border, and we're southeast of Charlotte, so that's close by. And it's free, and we're open. Do check ahead in case we're closed for a holiday, or occasionally we'll have to close for training or something like that, or the electricity will go out like last Friday. But so just check ahead.
I love that. And guys, I promise you, you will not be disappointed if you go to Jars. And people can find you on Facebook and Instagram as well?
Yes, we have Facebook page and Instagram, and we post every day with something fun and new that connects with our work.
And that is Alphabet Museum.
Yes.
Which when people are probably looking up, they're probably going, Jars, why won't it come up? So I make sure it's Alphabet Museum, which I love that.
Well, Jars also has pages in general, but the Alphabet Museum pages are specific related to the museums.
Well, Debbie, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to share about Jars. Like I said, Gracie and I were blown away when we had no idea what we were walking into. We're like, oh, it's a museum. Okay. I think that was our favorite part of the whole trip, was
great.
Going in and seeing that museum and learning about the different translations.
Well, I really appreciate hearing that. And thank you for having me on your show.
All right, guys, until next time, be blessed. And remember, keep chatting. Bye.
Chats from the Blog Cabin. We not only have voices for a podcast, but also faces for YouTube. Don't miss your next episode.